everyone. Thank you so much for joining us once again. My name is Alexa Rowland, and I'm the Outreach and Recruitment Lead for the East Asia and Pacific region, and I'm joined by my colleague, Caitlin Taylor, who's the Recruitment Lead for MENA and the Global Scholar Award Opportunity. So today, we are going to talk about some of the opportunities available specifically for postdoctoral and early career applicants. So these are opportunities that are open to postdocs only, and so you won't be in that kind of larger applicant pool with perhaps maybe more established scholars. So before we dive into those opportunities, we did just want to speak to the history of the program. This is really helpful to keep in mind as you put together your application components. So in 1945, after World War II, Senator J. William Fulbright of Arkansas introduced a bill which proposed using surplus war property in order to fund a program that established an increase in mutual understanding between people of the U.S. and people of other countries. President Truman then signed the bill into law in 1946, and Congress created the Fulbright Program. The primary source of funding for the Fulbright Program then is an annual appropriation by the U.S. Congress to the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, often referred to as ECA. So if you've attended some other webinars, you may hear that kind of thrown around often. So just to note, ECA stands for the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. My organization, IIE, then administers the program on behalf of ECA in the U.S., and Fulbright commissions and U.S. embassies abroad administer the program overseas. So overall, program eligibility requirements are shown here. Ultimately, you must be a U.S. citizen at the time of application. The other requirements are award-specific, so often you will hear throughout this presentation, especially when we get to the Q&A, is it depends, right? So you'll want to make sure that you do check those award requirements and award details within that catalog to ensure you're meeting all of the applicant requirements necessary. Other requirements may be that some awards are open to professionals outside of academia, and then within that catalog of awards, there's actually an advanced search filter feature in which you can seek specifically those awards if that fits your professional profile, right? So similarly, you can seek and kind of tag only awards that are open to postdoctoral candidates. So additionally, regarding terminal degrees, some are open to those who currently have their PhD or other terminal degree, whereas others don't require it. Additionally, we have awards available to, again, postdoctoral candidates, right? So you all, and I would encourage you to filter for those opportunities. But like I mentioned before, you are, of course, oftentimes eligible to apply to awards that include early career applicants as well. So that's kind of a separate profile. Regarding teaching experience, each award will list under the additional qualifications section how many years of teaching they would like each applicant to have, and sometimes they even include the type of teaching that they would count towards this requirement. And again, as with all award requirements, if you have a question or are unsure of your eligibility, please feel free to send a copy of your CV to the appropriate program staff person who is listed within that award, because we are here to help. And then lastly, if you're a Fulbright Scholar alum, you are eligible to apply again once it has been 2 years past your grant period end date. All right, so what does an application consist of? We'll collect basic biographical information within the application form, and then there's the project statement. And so this is the main component of your application, and it's the proposal where you'll outline what you hope to do while on this grant opportunity. You will also upload a CV or a resume, which you'll want to tailor to your award, as it should be no more than 6 pages or 8 pages for Distinguished Chair Awards. You will register 3 references who then submit letters of reference on your behalf. And if you are applying for a teaching or a teaching research grant activity, then one of the reference letters must address your teaching and come from someone who can speak to your teaching abilities. So oftentimes it's a kind of supervisor of some sort, a department chair, what have you, who can evaluate your teaching skills. And then depending on the type of grant activity and or the award, you may be asked to submit a syllabi, select bibliography, a language proficiency report, letter of invitation, or supplemental materials if you are applying in a creative arts discipline. So awards vary in letter of invitation requirement. For some, it is needed in order to apply, and it's required, while others, it's preferred or strongly preferred. Many awards will list the types of affiliations which are appropriate to propose, and some awards even do include contact information for specific institutions within the country that you are welcome to reach out to directly in order to receive the letter and discuss your project proposal. If there is not a contact listed, a specific location, then you are free to identify your own host institution. And there are kind of several routes you can go. Some applicants begin by reaching out to the head of a relevant department, but we also encourage applicants to contact specific professors or researchers with interests similar to their own. When reaching out to a foreign university for the first time, we generally suggest that you all send a copy of your CV and a brief description of the grant activities that you're hoping to pursue while on this opportunity. If your contacts then agree that there's a match and a need from their point of view as a host institution, then you may request a letter of invitation to include within your application. And so a note about the letter of invitation itself, there's not a set template for these letters, but we recommend that the host outline the activities for which you're invited, the period of time for which you're invited, and a description of their interest in your project and how it will benefit their institution. The letter should be addressed to you, and it should come from the person with appropriate authority to provide you with an invitation. So this may be a dean or a department chair. And in addition to reviewing the university websites, you may also find it helpful to survey the work of past Fulbrighters. So we have an online resource called the Fulbright Scholar Directory, and this page allows you to search for program alumni by grant year, host country, host institution, as well as discipline. So it can be really useful to get a feel for who has hosted Fulbrighters in the past.
So over the next few slides, we will discuss the 15 opportunities which are open to postdoctoral candidates only within our catalog of awards. So to get us started, Australia is offering 2 partnership awards, meaning you would be hosted at the particular institution listed within the award title. So you'll see here we have Deakin University and the University of Newcastle. So the first postdoctoral scholarship in all disciplines to Deakin is open to academics only, and selected candidates will be hosted by Deakin University. So in the top 2% of world universities, Deakin is a leader in higher education and has a reputation for being innovative, nimble, and friendly. The other postdoctoral opportunity for Australia is open to academics from multiple disciplines with research to be conducted at the University of Newcastle, a research leader in the fields of health, engineering, and energy. And you'll find contact information for the Office of the Pro Vice Chancellor within this award description. So that's kind of what I was mentioning on the previous slide. This award in particular does offer that kind of stepping stone to get started. A few key points just to note for all awards to Australia are that they are all research only. They have a January or February 2020 for this competition cycle start date, and a special project statement requirement for awards to Australia is to include a brief personal statement, and more information about that brief statement can be found within those award requirements tabs in the catalog. And they do require a letter of invitation, but as I mentioned, many of the partnership awards offer that point of contact within the award page to get started. So for the opportunity to Brazil, conduct postdoctoral activities in support of your professional development while advancing the scholarly mission of your selected host institution. Additionally, scholars may give periodic seminars in your particular area of research, as well as mentor graduate and undergraduate students. Priority will be given to applicants who locate their projects outside of the urban areas of Rio de Janeiro and Sao Paulo. So something to keep in mind when you are identifying those host institutions. So for Canada, undertake original research, public research findings, develop and expand personal research networks at the University of Northern British Columbia, located in Prince George, British Columbia. Most of UNBC's research focuses on the social, economic, environmental, and cultural issues of the North. So this has led to the establishment of world-class research in such areas as natural resources in the environment, rural, northern, and environmental health, and the sustainability of communities. Chile offers the Fulbright Astronomy and Antarctic Studies Award, and so this is for postdoctoral scholars and early career scientists. The aim of this award is to enhance research efforts and increase academic exchange opportunities in two specific areas of interest in Chile and U.S. academic work, so astronomy and data sciences and Antarctic studies. In astronomy and data sciences, the award seeks to fund postdoctoral fellows and early career scientists from the U.S. For 3 to 4 months to establish collaborations with astronomers and data scientists at Chilean institutions. As part of the international agreements, Chile is allowed to host several of the largest telescopes, and so Chilean universities are granted 10% observation time, which is just an awesome kind of in, right, for astronomy scientists. So when you're proposing your work, if you are applying to the astronomy and data science opportunity, then work with your host institution in Chile to kind of benchmark that time that you are hoping to have within that observation deck and using those telescopes. And so in our Antarctic studies, the Fulbright Commission has established a partnership with the Chilean Antarctic Institute to establish collaborations with researchers at the INACH in the listed research areas. So you'll see some listed areas on this slide. And applicants are actually required to contact Mason Taylor, who is the program officer for U.S. grantees at the Fulbright Commission in Chile, before applying. And so you can find contact information under the award requirements tab for this award in particular as well. So conduct postdoctoral research on a project in your area of expertise, focusing on China, or a project that is comparative in nature through the China Studies Postdoctoral Scholar Award. For this award in particular, part of the research may be done in Hong Kong or Taiwan, and applicants must hold a doctoral degree conferred by August 1st, 2018. So that is the application deadline for this current competition cycle. So for this award in particular, you must have your PhD conferred by the time you're applying. This award also includes an in-country travel allowance to guest lecture at other universities within China, and projects in the areas of global climate change, sustainability, and the environment are particularly sought. For the Taiwan postdoc opportunity, you can conduct postdoctoral research while collaborating with a Taiwanese academic or research institution of your choice. So, and for this award as well, with prior approval, up to one-fifth of your total grant period may be spent in mainland China if it's necessary for your research. Projects with a specialization in cross-strait studies, international education, marine science, and migration and immigration policy are especially sought. And previous research grantees have actually been affiliated with such organizations as the National Central Library, National Palace Museum, National Health Research Institute, and many universities and colleges throughout Taiwan. And as with many awards in the catalog of awards, collaboration with local scholars is highly desirable, right? And so that just speaks to the larger Fulbright mission where it is this international educational exchange. So the idea is that you're not going abroad to purely fill your research piece, but you are lending your expertise and skills to the local research community as well.
Okay, thanks, Alexa. So now I'm going to take over for the next sort of half of the other awards, starting with Egypt. So this award is unique for a couple of reasons. One is that the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program to Egypt is reopening this year. So Egypt has not hosted a Fulbright postdoc in a good long while, so there is a great need and a large potential to make a lasting impact. Also, this award is special because it doesn't require a letter of invitation. Applicants, of course, can indicate a preference and are welcome to submit a letter of invitation, but the Fulbright Commission in Egypt will ultimately handle placement for you. There is a preference for projects that are based in Cairo, as well as projects that are sort of neutral enough to easily obtain ministry approval. So sensitive topics, such as the Arab Spring or some journalism projects are not really recommended. But this postdoc would allow you to conduct research in any area of the arts, sciences, humanities, or social sciences for 3 to 9 months. And Arabic is not required per se. You would just need to have the language skills you need to conduct your research. So if your research can be done in English, that's great. No Arabic is necessary. You just need to explain that in your project statement. And I see that we do have a question about language skills, how to demonstrate language skills to the host country. And the way that that's done, and Alexa sort of briefly talked about this in her slide on the application components, but there is a sort of two-part language evaluation that you would fill out. The first part is a fairly simple self-evaluation where you would just say, I'm, intermediate here, I'm advanced here, and, it's such an easy part of the application. I would recommend that even if you don't have a high level of language proficiency, to at least fill that part out. The second part would be an external evaluation, and you would ask a previous Arabic professor or someone on your campus that instructs in that language to basically write a very brief sort of fourth letter of recommendation that would just sort of go over where they would sort of assess you to be in terms of your proficiency in whatever language you're asking them to evaluate. So that's how that would be done. So in terms of what universities are available in Egypt, any and all, like I said, there is a preference for universities that are in the Cairo area, but really any university, any accredited university would be an eligible host. And if there are any questions about, about finding a host, I'm, happy to put you in touch with the Fulbright Commission in Egypt. They're very helpful, and they'd be happy to sort of recommend specific universities if you have a specific field that you're in, they'll be able to kind of tell you which universities in the Cairo area would be the best fit for you. Okay, so the Fulbright-Schumann Postdoctoral Award is based at the European University Institute in the gorgeous city of Florence, Italy. This opportunity is also 3 to 9 months, and the grantee would focus on developing professional skills such as teaching, academic writing and publishing, and job market presentation within the field of EU studies. You'd have very close contact with the Robert Schumann Center for Advanced Studies, which is devoted to interdisciplinary comparative and policy research on major issues in the European integration process, as well as the Max Weber program, which is currently the largest international postdoctoral training program in the social sciences. Applications for this particular award are sought in all disciplines, but applications in area studies, economics, non-US history, law, political science, and sociology are preferred. And applicants should have a demonstrated interest in EU studies that is represented through the publication of articles which carry observations, prognoses, and suggestions for current topics important to the transatlantic relationship. We offer two postdoctoral fellowship opportunities in France. The first is the Fulbright EHSS, or it's the EHESS, EHESS, postdoctoral award in social sciences. So this opportunity is 9 to 12 months, but there is a preference for 12 months. The fellowship is going to take place at, and forgive my horrible French pronunciation, the École des Hautes Études en Sciences Sociales in Paris. This institution's international focus is sort of at the heart of both its research centers and its collaborations with those universities and scientific centers around the world, where today's most significant advances in social sciences are being made. Applications for the postdoctoral program should include these international dimensions. The first mission of the institution is to help young researchers acquire an international scientific background through the quality of its teaching, the international profiles of its professors, and the quality scope of its research. All disciplines are welcome for this award, but they do have a preference for either American history or studies, anthropology, area studies, economics, non-US history, linguistics, mathematics, philosophy, psychology, sociology, and cognitive science. So in addition to pursuing your own research, you would participate as well in a seminar series conducted by the Associated Research Center. And for this particular award, a PhD is required, and you would need to complete that by June of 2019 at the latest. So the second award is the Hauts-de-France Regional Award. This fellowship is 12 months, but there is a possibility to extend for an additional year. Grantees are expected to reside in the Hauts-de-France region, which is in the very northern part of France, at the sort of golden triangle of London, Paris, and Brussels. They're looking for candidates in the hard and social sciences as well as the humanities, including planet health and intelligence issues. The priority areas for this region are multidisciplinary projects, including humanities and involving cross-cutting fields in biology and health, food, physics, chemistry and material sciences, math, computer science, energy, transport, and digital image and cognitive science. As with all of these awards, a PhD is required, and applicants must have French language ability commensurate with the requirements of the project. So really, the level of French that is needed is going to depend on what you're working on and who your hosts are. We also offer two different kinds of postdoctoral fellowships in Israel, an all-disciplines fellowship and one that is specifically for Israel studies. There will be 8 spots under the all-disciplines award and 1 under the Israel studies award. Now, Israel is a top destination for postdocs because of just the sheer number of top-tier universities in the country. Any accredited institution of higher education may serve as a host, so the opportunities, the range of opportunities is very broad. These awards are special for a couple of reasons. One is that they can go for up to 20 months, so feasibly you could do a 2-year postdoc in Israel under either of these awards. An expression of interest from a host institution is required for this award, and that typically takes the form of acceptance into the institution's formal postdoctoral fellowship program. It is important to note that there is a financial commitment that the hosts must meet for this these two awards. So the host will be asked to provide a grant no smaller than their own standard institutional postdoctoral award, a description of which would need to be included in the letter of invitation that you're submitting with your application. So essentially, you're being accepted into their postdoc program as well as the Fulbright Fellowship. So this means that in addition to the very generous Fulbright Fellowship amount of $70,000, you'd be also drawing from a stipend from your host as well. So these, two fellowships in Israel do happen to be sort of the most generous in terms of stipend of all the postdoc awards that we offer. And then according to Israeli regulations, a researcher can be defined as a postdoc fellow for a period of 5 years, beginning from the date of the award of his or her doctorate. So as to be eligible for a Fulbright Fellowship that would begin in 2019, candidates must have received their PhD degrees no earlier than April of 2016 in order to remain eligible as a postdoc researcher for the duration of the fellowship. One perception is that universities this opportunity in Israel, you know, that it's limited to people who speak fluent Hebrew and have extensive ties to the country. But this is not the case. The Fulbright Commission is especially interested in encouraging scholars and professionals who may not have extensive exposure to the country and who wish to forge some new connections and networks. I also want to mention that postdocs in Israel benefit from really immense support from the Fulbright Commission that's based in Tel Aviv. They're there, you know, not only to help you to settle in when you arrive, but they also provide you with opportunities to socialize with other Fulbrighters. They can help troubleshoot any problems that might arise, and they can help facilitate access to any officials or other academics that you might need to speak to about your research. And so, you know, please reach out to me at the email address on the screen if you're interested in either of these opportunities. And I'd also be happy to help facilitate an introduction to the Fulbright Commission in Israel if you would like to speak to them about sort of the financial commitment component, potential hosts, or anything else. So our postdoctoral scholar award to Mexico offers the opportunity to conduct original research, publish findings, and develop and expand a personal research network in Mexico and sort of prepare for the research-intensive careers within and beyond academia. This opportunity is 3 to 9 months, though there is a preference for full academic year grants. There's also a preference for applicants with a PhD conferred within the past 3 years, and intermediate proficiency in Spanish is required. So applicants must provide a letter of invitation from a Mexican university or an accredited institution, you know, research center, something like that, before the grant start date. The Fulbright Commission in Mexico is able to assist with this affiliation if necessary. If you're having sort of trouble finding an appropriate host, you can reach out to them and they are happy to give recommendations. Something unique about this award, so recommended applicants will be invited to actual web interviews with a panel of experts from the Fulbright Commission in Mexico's staff, and that would be in November, you know, before you would go out on your grant. So all disciplines will be considered for this particular award, with the exception of medicine, veterinary medicine, and dentistry. STEM fields are a priority, and so medical sciences that do not include any patient contact will be considered. And then the Fulbright Commission in Mexico is also interested in projects that focus on public policy and health initiatives, but they also have a long history of supporting projects in the arts. So, you know, it really is open to all disciplines here. Okay, and then the final opportunity that we're going to talk to you about today before we kind of move on to some of the tips for putting together a strong application, this one is in Spain. It's a 5 to 9 month junior research award. So grantees can be hosted by any Spanish university, higher ed institution, or research center, and all disciplines will be considered. So in addition to conducting research, the grantee might be asked to present lectures, seminars, workshops, things like that. Applicants should arrange affiliation in Spain, and you would submit a letter of invitation indicating the name and position of the research advisor with whom you are planning to collaborate and the availability of whatever research resources you are planning to use. The letter would need to be signed by the research advisor and have the approval of the head of the corresponding department. The U.S.-Spain Fulbright Commission provides wide support to selected candidates regarding administrative issues such as the visa process, and they also provide an ample pre-departure and arrival information. However, they are not able to assist in establishing contacts with the prospective host institutions. So PhD candidates must receive the terminal degree no later than February 1st of 2019 and should include a letter from their thesis advisor sort of confirming their status that you're going to be graduating at that time. Spanish language proficiency sufficient to complete the research project is required, so like other awards, you know, the level of language ability that you'll need will sort of depend on what you're planning on doing. But, you know, they do recommend that you discuss this point with your host institution beforehand and ask whether a language other than Spanish is widely used in the area, such as, you know, Catalan or Basque. You know, researchers are usually fluent in English, but for day-to-day life, some knowledge of Spanish would be useful, especially if you're going to be based in a smaller city. And then, you know, please note that candidates that have dual U.S. Spanish citizenship or any candidates that would be residing in Spain at the time of application are not eligible for this award. So now I'm going to hand it back over to Alexa, who's going to go over some additional awards available to early career scholars and then some application tips.
Great. Thank you, Kate. And kind of perfect timing because we just got a question about postdoctoral opportunities in Central Asia. And so while we don't have awards open to only postdocs for Central Asia, there is an opportunity to apply to the Fulbright-Nehru Academic and Professional Excellence Award. And so what we wanted to highlight on this slide is that there are over 250 awards which you also may be eligible to apply to depending where you are after having received your postdoc, right? So awards which are open to all levels of scholars, including early career. So if one of the others maybe don't seem to be the right fit for you, definitely do take a look at these numerous opportunities in the catalog of awards as well. And so the idea with these awards is just that they are open to all levels, right? So when you're thinking about perhaps like the applicant pool that you're going up against, your application will be viewed reviewed by the same criteria for those other scholars as well. So the 15 postdoc opportunities we just highlighted are open only to postdoctoral candidates. So that's just the little difference between the two. And so then moving into, along the same lines, how will your application be competitive? So we recommend that you do keep the larger Fulbright mission of promoting mutual understanding in mind when you craft your application components. This overreaching goal isn't lost on reviewers, right, or lost on the posts and commissions abroad. So when they're selecting finalists, it definitely is something that they are looking for in the application itself, that exchange of expertise and skills and knowledge. So also what they're looking for is kind of why are you interested in conducting this project in your proposed host country that you've identified. With everything Fulbright, being country specific is pretty key. What will this opportunity then do for you and for your home institution? And again, as well as your host institution, what skills are you offering? Where is that exchange happening within your project? Additionally, you'll want to articulate through your application, mostly in that project statement piece, your flexibility and adaptability, right? These are traits that reviewers are looking for when selecting Fulbright applicants because sometimes you might be put into a somewhat challenging situation. So knowing how you may handle that before going overseas is pretty important. Also, along the same lines as traits is going to be how will you make for a great unofficial U.S. cultural ambassador when you're overseas as well. And again, almost as important as what you are going to do once you are in country are going to be the long-lasting outcomes and impacts that this project will have for your professional development, for your home campus when you return to the U.S., and also for future collaborations and relationships that may spring about from this grant opportunity, be it a way to internationalize your home campus and curriculum upon your return. And then, so we've also been talking a fair amount about some online resources that we have available. And so we strongly encourage you to visit our website and view these resources. The peer review committee that I just kind of referred to, they view applications against the review criteria, which we provide for you all on our website. And it's kind of like a checklist, right? So you'll want to make sure that your application as a whole addresses these items listed in this checklist that reviewers are looking for. The idea is that reviewers really shouldn't be walking away from your application with more questions than answers. Additionally, I'd recommend taking a look at that specific project statement guidance that we have available and the broader application guidelines. It can be a little confusing when you're applying to a particular grant activity, and so the application guidelines give you a chance to expand the list of required application components based on the activity, so be it teaching or research or the combination teaching-research opportunity. And then also, if you haven't already, do sign up for My Fulbright. It's an online kind of community, right, where you can register your interests and receive relevant information. So it could be for awards within your region of interest, but also perhaps within your discipline of interest. And of course, you will then also receive future webinar invitations, which can be useful as you work through this application process. And so now I know we wanted to open it up for some questions. Kate, did you just want to speak to the ones listed here?
Yeah, sure. So these are some of our most common questions that we get. You know, number one, you know, how can I contact you? Below you can kind of see that the scholars@iie.org email is the, our sort of general email inbox. So that's a good place to start if you have any sort of basic questions. And then in each of the award descriptions, sort of all the way onto the, sort of the right side, you'll see that there is a program staff contact information that is listed there. And that particular person or email would be the individual that would have the most knowledge about that particular award. So if you have a question that is very award specific, you'll want to reach out to the person that's listed in the award description. Also, the application deadline, so that is going to be on August 1st at 2018, but you know, you're also welcome to submit that your application before that date. And we don't cut off the applications at any particular point. We don't sort of lock out the system at 11:59. At any time on August 1st, you would be sort of the latest date that you could submit your application. And then another question that we get a lot is about, you know, how many applications do you get for this award? You know, what are my chances? And that is not something that we are able to share with applicants. It's part of the policy that has been set by the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board. However, you know, it really, you know, kind of comes down to common sense. Typically, countries that are very popular tourism destinations, those do tend to be also correspond to being some of our more competitive awards in our catalog. And then another question, can I apply to two or more awards in the same competition if you're sort of interested in multiple ones? Can you apply to both? And the answer to that is no. You can only apply to one award each competition. So you really do need to take some time and put some thought into narrowing it down to one opportunity that you're interested in, and you would need to only apply to that particular award. So now kind of moving on to some of your questions, and let me see, I guess, Alexa, you already sort of talked about this, but postdoctoral opportunities in Central Asia and in Sub-Saharan Africa, there are many awards that are open to early career scholars. What we were talking about today are only awards that were sort of open only to postdoctoral scholars, but there are many, many awards that are open to to you in those regions as well. And if you just sort of go into the catalog and select early career awards, and perhaps, Alexa, you could kind of show them how to do that. If you go into the catalog and go into the advanced search function that's on the left here, you can narrow things down by region, which is really great. There are lots of other ways that you can narrow things down by discipline. But then if you go to category, you'll see here that you can go to this little one that says core open to all levels of scholars, including early career scholars. And that would pull up all kinds of opportunities for you. So you can see that there are 43 awards in Africa that are open to early career scholars as well.
Yeah, thank you for walking through that. I did want to point that out. We've also gotten some questions about the grant duration. So again, you can adjust for the type of grant you are looking for within these filter options within that catalog of awards. So So definitely play around with this. I know we got a question about Zambia, and we do offer an early career opportunity, just not the one that is only open to postdoctoral candidates. So definitely play around with the filter options here. That will help kind of narrow down your search for an appropriate award to apply to. And so just bear with us a moment. We got some questions coming in, and feel free to keep sending them in. But we're just going to take a look at them for now. So thank you for holding on.
So I see a question. This is a really good one. So this particular person is asking, I just received my PhD, and I do not have an association to a U.S. institution yet. Is it possible to apply as a Fulbright, as an independent researcher? And the answer to that is yes. You do not need to have any home institution affiliation. You can apply as an independent researcher. Yes, that is fine. And many do as postdocs. But related to that question, someone was asking about whether if you are in a tenure track position, if you're still considered a postdoc, and that's something that really depends on the award. In Israel, for example, if you have a tenure track position, then you would not be eligible for that particular award. But that's something that you'll need to take a look and kind of narrow down the opportunity. The award descriptions will sort of specifically say. But typically, if you're within 5 years of completing your degree, you're considered a postdoc. And then even if some of the postdoc opportunities, if they, are perhaps not willing to accept applications from people that have tenure track positions, then there are 299 opportunities that are open to early career scholars that you could also look at.
Great. Okay. And we did get some questions about the host institution and kind of what their contribution is. So the host institution, what you'll need from them for the application deadline is going to be that letter of invitation. And when I say what you'll need, of course, it depends, right, on the specific award that you are applying to. And so I can show you here within the catalog, if we select one of these options, let's take Benin, and if you go into the award requirements tab here, you will see whether a letter of invitation is preferred, optional, strongly preferred, or required. And so when it is strongly preferred, we do recommend that you make kind of every effort to obtain one. This just helps speak to the feasibility of the project you're outlining for reviewers when they are looking at it. And so for host contributions, really what they are offering, it's not monetary based, but it's going to be access to resources, again, speaking to that feasibility piece, right? So access to lab time if your project requires it, access to an office space, again, if your project requires it. So just kind of addressing those questions. And on our website, we do offer some letter of invitation guidance, so I'll go ahead and navigate to that here. Also just showing you, if you go to CORE, go to Application tab, these are the application guidelines I was referring to earlier on, where you can kind of look at, okay, what does my application need in order to be considered complete by August 1st? And so in here you can go, you'll see letter of invitation, and we do offer some tips and tricks and just kind of the outlines that the outline of what the letter should really entail.
And there's a question here about about childcare and bringing dependents along on your grants, and that is a great question. Many Fulbrighters do bring their children, their spouses along with them on their grants, and what support is available will depend on the award. For most awards, there will be sort of an increased stipend to sort of account for the additional people that you would be bringing on your grant. So that would mean, an additional or somewhat larger stipend for housing, stipend for just sort of the day-to-day cost of food and things like that. Depending on the age of your children as well, there may be some benefits, tuition benefits. That would only be if they're sort of K through 12. But that, again, will depend on the country. And Alexa, if you could go back to the catalog real quick, a really important place to look is to the award benefits tab. And on this tab, you're able to see sort of an estimate of the stipend amount. And if it tends towards the higher end of the stipend, that's typically for people that are bringing dependents along with them. And if you're bringing dependents as well, their travel would be covered. There up to two of them would be covered. So you could bring two. I mean, you can bring more than that, but two of your dependents, their round trip airfare would be covered as well. And then one particularly interesting thing about Africa and the Middle East is that there is a dependent tuition allowance in some countries, which I mentioned is that if you wanted to send your children to a private school or whatever, there would be, you could be reimbursed up to $12,500 per child in Africa, and I believe in the Middle East it's up to $8,000 per child. But if you kind of go into the award benefits tab of any particular award, it will let you know what benefits are open to you.
Great, yeah, thank you. We've received some questions regarding, you know, experience in country and kind of outlining whether that's a negative or whether you're still eligible to apply to that country. So in the overall program eligibility requirements, and I do recommend that you guys take a look at that webpage. So in the overall program eligibility requirements, we do have information regarding the length of time that an applicant has resided outside of the U.S. So pretty much it's just going to say that candidates who have resided abroad for five or more consecutive years in the six-year period preceding the date of application are ineligible. And so then for those who have had experience in country, it's going to go on to state that preference is generally given to candidates who have not had substantial recent experiences abroad in the country to which they're applying. So again, you'll have to kind of decide what that experience looks like for your application. Sometimes it is a positive to have that prior experience. And again, those award details and requirements, read them thoroughly, because I know some are open to, are seeking country specialists, right? So they're looking for people who have experience within that country and or that region. So it can definitely be a positive. And what I'd recommend is just speak to how you are going to kind of build upon that past experience with this Fulbright Scholar Grant opportunity.
Okay. Great. So there's a question about host institutions, about whether you can have two hosts. And that is something, again, that will depend on the award, but by and large, the answer to that question is going to be no, that you need to have one main host institution, and we would only accept one letter of invitation. So you cannot receive invitations from both hosts and include both in your application, generally. I would also just, you know, mention that it's, you know, it is possible to have a, you know, some kind of relationship with another institution, or if there's another collaborator that you're interested in working with, that is something that you definitely can do. But in your application, you would need to only have one official host, one official letter of invitation. But you can also, of course, mention that you have other research connections in the region that you would perhaps plan to work with. But the main kicker here, the question that you're going to want to be thinking about is feasibility, and that's one of the review criteria that are considered by our reviewers. Actually, Alexa, why don't we show them where the review criteria are so that you guys can kind of see if we go to, like, the main programs page. Yeah, and we can navigate over to the review criteria. So these are the review criteria that the reviewers are going to be looking at when they're assessing your award. We actually print these out on a big poster board, and we are sort of continually directing them to sort of direct their comments and their concerns about your application to these particular criteria. And if you're thinking about working with multiple hosts, the feasibility criteria is something that will definitely come up. Because if you're sort of proposing to do too much, if you're proposing to do a project where you're visiting a ton of different institutions, that's something that reviewers will say, well, that's not possible. That he, you know, how is this person going to be able to really make a contribution to his or her host institution if they're kind of splitting their time between multiple hosts? So that's just something to keep in mind if you're interested in working with multiple hosts as well, is that, you know, maybe acknowledging that, you know, 95% of your time is going to be spent with this particular host and contributing to that host, but that you also do have some other connections that you're hoping to nourish while you're there.
Okay, awesome. So we've received a question regarding, you know, if you're applying to an all disciplines award, but your discipline isn't necessarily highlighted as a preferred discipline or specialization. So by and large, we advise that you apply to a country and an award in which you meet the outlined qualifications within that award description and the award requirements. But also, it has to be where you feel you have the strongest proposal and connections, right, to create, again, speaking to what Kate just said, that feasibility piece, to create a long-lasting impact also from your Fulbright grant. So although all discipline awards often do list preferred disciplines and specializations, they are, you know, open and wanting to receive applications from any appropriate discipline. So that definitely doesn't mean that other disciplines and specializations aren't qualified to apply. So don't let that deter you.
And a couple of more questions about host institutions. So another question about whether it's possible to apply without having a host university. That depends on the award. So, for example, the award that I spoke about in Egypt, they do not require a letter of invitation. But that's another thing that you can search in the catalog by. You can search for letter of invitation not required or optional. And then for those particular awards, you would not need to have a letter of invitation, though you would still want to indicate a couple of preferred hosts if you have them. And then another question about hosts is that if a university, you know, does not yet have a connection to the Fulbright program, could you still get a letter of invitation for someone an institution that maybe is new? And that, again, will depend on the award. Some awards will say specifically, you know, this is the university or these are the four universities that you can go to. And others will say any accredited institution. And if that is the case, then, you know, the institution doesn't necessarily have to have hosted a Fulbrighter before. It can be a new institution. And that actually can really be framed as an advantage because the potential to sort of leave a lasting impact and to sort of facilitate a connection between Fulbright and this institution is huge. If they've never hosted a Fulbrighter before, there's, you know, might be more of a need there. So that is all to say that, yes, depending on the award, you could solicit a letter of invitation from a host that has not previously hosted a Fulbrighter.
Okay, and we got some questions regarding East Asian Pacific awards specifically. So I just wanted to say, one was just, are there awards in Thailand? Yes, there's an all disciplines award to Thailand. So definitely encourage you to take a look at the catalog. And if you have any questions, reach out to the East Asia Pacific team at eastasiapacific@iie.org. And another one was about the ASEAN fellowship opportunity, the ASEAN research program. So we didn't speak to these programs today, but they are also open to early career scholars as well. So that one was regarding letters of invitation in each country. And so I will just say that does, again, depend on the countries that you're proposing within that region. So I would recommend taking a look at the other awards offered to that country and seeing what that letter of invitation guidance is. And again, if you have any questions specifically for ASEAN or EAP, reach out to eastasiapacific@iie.org. But of course, as I showed, well, here, I'll point it out once more here, every award will have the appropriate program staff listed within those award catalog details. So don't hesitate to reach out to us. We are here to help, and we want to answer your questions. So I think we have some time for maybe one or two more.
Yeah. There's one really good question. What's the difference between postdoctoral status versus early career status? And that's something that, I mean, I think is sort of open to interpretation, but my understanding is that sort of postdoctoral status is more intended for very recent PhD graduates that may not have a career, a tenure track career ready yet, but they have not applied or been accepted into that kind of position yet. And each award will have sort of specifics that a postdoctoral researcher that's considered, if you've got your degree in the last 5 years, in the last 3 years, there will be, you know, way more sort of specific requirements on the postdoc side. Versus early career status, that sort of, you know, that's a little bit more open to interpretation. If you have, you know, received your PhD, again, in the last 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, you can kind of, you know, think about that. But it, and then it would also sort of include people that do have 10-year track jobs at the moment. But if you have any questions about whether you kind of be considered in the postdoc or the early career categories, just reach out to us and we can give you an assessment. Just send us your CV and we'll be able to say sort of which you fall into.
Great.
Another question about the application is of whether you need to submit a budget. No, that's not part of the application. You wouldn't need to submit a budget. All right, do you see any other ones that you want to?
Yeah, so thank you again for all of these questions. We're not going to be able to get to them all. However, again, reach out to the program staff, and if your question wasn't answered here, we will be following up to do just that. And so, yeah, I think at this point, we're in a pretty good position to go ahead and end the webinar. Thank you guys so much for taking the time and joining us today. We hope you found it useful. And again, we are eager to hear from you all, so don't hesitate to reach out.
Yep. Thank you, everyone.
All right. Have a great day.